It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
From baseball's top personalities,
the Hall of Famer, one of the great TV broadcasters, Bob Costas, is here on A's Cast Live.
To the A's legendary players,
five-time Major League Baseball home run champ Mark McGwire is with us here.
You never know what stories you're going to hear.
We used to come out here to lunch and run with our shirts off.
You and Sandy.
This is A's Unfiltered with Chris Townsend.
Time now for another edition of A's Unfiltered. Today, we're going to have Robbie Grossman, former Athletic. And how about the great Jim Leland, one of the best managers of all time, former A's Sonny Gray, and Bernie Williams, the four-time World Series champion and now Grammy nominee as a jazz guitarist. We will start with the former left fielder for your Oakland Athletics, now a Tiger, Robbie Grossman. Robbie, it has been a while. How are you there in Detroit?
I'm good. Everything's good. Thanks for having me on. Good to hear from you again.
Well, no doubt. We always loved when you were here with the Oakland Athletics, and we actually just mentioned this to you off the air, you know, with the lockout and missing basically a little more than a week, the schedule's been crazy. And for you guys in Detroit, it's something like 34 games in 35 days. I mean, you talk about starting a season like this. What's it been like?
It's been a grind, but something where I have to deal with league-wide with the late start to the season.
So what has it been like playing for the Tigers? I know you guys come into this kind of like the A's. The A's have lost 9 straight. You guys have you've lost 5 straight. What's it been like for you guys?
We got to keep grinding and collectively come together and figure out how to win games and play well-rounded baseball on all sides, pitching, defense, and hitting the ball, and continue to grind these things out.
You know, you got an interesting mix there in Detroit where you have, obviously, veteran players like yourself. You have a future Hall of Famer in Miguel Cabrera who's been doing some just unbelievable things. And then you got a lot of young guys who definitely are the answer now and truly the answer for the future of Tigers baseball. What has playing on this team in the mix been like?
It's been a great mix. We got a great group of guys. And like you said, we have Miggy, who has amazing accomplishments and just lucky enough to be his teammate. And then we got some young guys who are trying to get their just find their footing here in the big leagues and figure out who they are and how life in the big leagues is and the adjustment day to day and what it takes to become a big leaguer.
You know, every single time Miggy does something, and you just look at it, and you look at the names he's associated with. When you start talking 500 home runs, 3,000 hits, then you throw in, you know, all the doubles. And next thing you know, it's Hank Aaron or Willie Mays or whoever. You guys are riding that ride with him. That just must be amazing. What is it like?
It's incredible. It's incredible. It seems like every time he gets a hit, he's passing someone else. And the names that he's passing and the games he's played, and it's just incredible. And I'm lucky enough to call him my teammate. And one day I can tell my kids that, hey, I played with a Hall of Famer.
You know how tough it is to hit in this game. What is it about him at this age that still allows him to perform at such a high level?
I mean, he just has such a great swing and just a God-given ability to hit a baseball. But the one thing that's overlooked by him is his competitiveness. Like, I don't know if I've been around someone that's as competitive as him and how much it really burns him to win every day. And everyone asks me what surprises you about him that most people wouldn't know, and it's just his competitiveness. And there's a reason why he's played this long and accomplished so many things because he's such a competitive guy and he wants to win every day.
Yeah. You talk about the complete package. I got his numbers here, a career 310 average. He's got 503 home runs. He's got 600 doubles. He's got over 3,000 hits, 1,813 RBIs. You know, you start thinking about 20 years and everything he does, the multiple MVPs and everything. And then in his speech, after his 3,000th hit, we got to see you guys had the glass of champagne. You're right. He really wasn't talking about himself. He was talking about this team winning, going after the division. Did any of you guys, were you guys looking around going, man, is this real? Is this guy really talking about us when everything that he's done and accomplished?
I think some of the young guys were taken aback by that, but he did the same thing when he hit this 500 homer. It wasn't about him. It was about the team. And it was about, he was more proud of, he could do it for his country, his home country of Venezuela. And it was never about him. And I think that's what makes him special. And I'm lucky enough to be around him every single day. And it's never about him. It's always about the team and what he can do to help the team or and how bad he wants to win.
How much can you pick his brain? And you, I mean, obviously you're a switch hitter, but how much can you pick his brain and you learn hitting from him?
I ask him all kinds of questions all the time. And just little things I try to get from him. But more so, I just watch him. Just watching him go about his routine, go about his batting practice. I mean, it's something that you tell stories about. So it's something that I try to soak up as much information as I can from him.
You know, the last time I was in Detroit was before COVID. You were still on our team at that time. And I remember being in Comerica just going, man, this place oozes history with all the great history and all the players who played for the Tigers. You know, in your career, whether you're an Astro, a Twin, or an A, what has it been like playing for the Tigers?
I mean, like you said it best, and there's so much history here. Just to go off the names that have played here before and just how much success they've had and how much this team means to the city, it's pretty remarkable.
You know, I know somebody asked you about the Coliseum, and you gave your honest opinion about the Coliseum. And, yeah, the Coliseum is old, and we all know the A's, and you understand as a former player – a lot of the fans understand, you know, that we need a new stadium. I mean, there's no question about it, but there's going to be that part of the fan base that just hates when the Coliseum gets brought up. When you did mention that, what was that like? I know there was some, like on Twitter, maybe you didn't even pay attention, but there's people that are like, I can't believe he said that. What happened there?
I think more so, I want to clarify my comments about that. It wasn't a knock on the fans. It wasn't a knock on the players. It was more so like, hey, the city needs to figure out something. Like the Coliseum is no longer playable. Either build a new stadium, or we need to figure something out. They deserve better. The fans deserve better. The players deserve better.
And people need to know you like playing for the A's. You like playing for Bob Melvin.
I loved it. My time in Oakland was special. I'm still close with a bunch of teammates from there. I love my time with the A's, and it will always hold a special place in my heart in my baseball career.
You know, I think, and I know you got to go, you got to get ready for this game today, but I know one guy that means a lot to you, and he's still here, and we reference you too, is Jed Lowry. And do you still work out with Jed in the offseason?
I do. I work out with him. I hit with him. We hit at the same place, and I'm looking forward to catching up with him.
Just how important is that to have that relationship with someone who – you really can't, it's apples to apples. You really can compare, ask questions. Cause as a switch, you know, it's one thing to ask a hitting coach or whatever, but if he's not a switch hitter, it's hard. Isn't it really hard for people who don't switch hit to understand what you're going through? And that's one of the reasons why you and Jed have had such a great relationship.
Yes. And there's only so many of us left switch hitting in this game. And the older I get, the less guys that are older than me that switch hit. So, I'm glad I had this relationship with Jed, and I can always ask him and have his opinion because I respect his opinion and it means a lot to me. And I just, I appreciate our friendship.
Hey, well, it always means a lot when you come on the program. You've always been great to us here on A's Cast. Good luck. We'll see you when you come to Oakland, but good luck with the Tigers. We'll always be rooting for you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. Always good talking to you.
From one Tiger to another. Hey, you want to talk about great managers? Jim Leland, one of the best of his time, a World Series champion, and a three-time Manager of the Year, now a consultant for the Detroit Tigers. Jim, how you doing? Chris Townsend with the Oakland A's.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great. It's great to have you on the program. How have you been?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
So we got an interesting series here with two different teams. I know you've been looking at the Tigers a lot for the A's. Unfortunately, we've fallen on hard times here. A's have lost 9 in a row. Tigers have lost 5 in a row. And you got 5 games in 4 days. How do you view this series?
Well, I just think that both teams are in the same situation. Both teams are trying to win one game. You got to start with the first game being played tonight and try to win that game. You can't worry about the 5-game series. You can't worry about, can't chew yesterday's breakfast. You got to just move forward and try to win a ball game. And that's what AJ and Kasha are going to try to do tonight. They're going to try to put their team in the best chance to win a game and then go from there and hope that they pick up a little momentum.
What was it like in a season managing where you know the expectations are you're going to try and win every game, but you're not going to win a lot of games, but it is trying to find young players that are going to help you in the future? What is it like managing a year like that?
Well, I think it's a very interesting job because you got to really make judgments on whether the young people that you're trying are the real deal or not. So that's one thing. You become kind of a scout as well as a manager. So you have to be able to project on their future, and are they going to be there when your team gets good? So that's one thing you look at. The other thing you look at is how do those young players adjust to the major league level, the pace of the game, the speed of the game, the crowds, the media, you know, overall, their overall persona, how do they handle everything? That's another thing that you're looking at. The one thing you have to be careful of is when you're losing games like that, and I went through it, you have to be careful that you don't get out of sync as a manager and start doing stuff that really doesn't make a lot of sense because you're trying to do stuff. You're trying to create stuff that's really not there. So you got to be careful with that. I think you got to push once in a while if your club's not hitting for sure and things like that. But you got to be careful that you don't try things that really, you know, aren't going to be factors when your team gets good. You got to manage solid, manage the game solid, make solid decisions, and you know, you will forever, as a manager, you will forever be either the victim or the beneficiary of your player's performance. So you have to keep all that intact.
You know, in the past, whether it was Bob Melvin or now talking to Mark Kotze about a situation like this, they talk about the teaching aspect. One of the things that they do enjoy with, let's say you have a lot of young players, is getting back to the origin of being a coach. Did you feel like that during times like this?
Absolutely, yes. You're trying to correct mistakes that are made. You're trying to avoid mistakes that could be made. You're trying to mature the young players. You're trying to grow them up in the major leagues, which is kind of hard to do. You're trying to understand at all times how tough the game is to play, so you got to be careful you're not too hard on them. Yet there's a fine line there. You can't be too hard on them, but you can't baby them so much that they think it's okay. You know, they still have to learn how to grow and perform and mature and graduate, so to speak. So there's a fine line there. It's a big job for a manager, but it's a very interesting job because it's very rewarding to see these players get better. And a lot of them go on to have very solid major league careers. Hopefully it's with the Oakland A's. In some cases it is, some cases it's not. But it's very rewarding when you see guys make progress. And it just, it kind of eases the pain of some tough losses, which you're going to have. I went through a bunch of them after we won the World Series. We went to a bunch of kids, and we just got beat up. But there was still a lot of gratification. So I think you have to just look at the overall picture. You have to stay consistent as a manager. You have to stay consistent as an organization. You have to believe in your players. You have to give them opportunities. And you have to make them understand that it's like a defense lawyer. If you want somebody to defend you as a player, then you got to give them something to go to court with. So you got to give us something that shows us that you're making progress, that you've got a chance to be a good player. Give me something to take to the general manager as to why I want to keep playing this guy. So the players have to chip in as well.
That is the best explanation I've ever heard about this, because I've been through this now a couple times in my career. And I think about a guy that we have, Jim, that's exactly what you're talking about, Christian Pache, who we traded Matt Olson. He was part of the Matt Olson trade coming over. He's one of the top prospects for the Braves. He's 6'2", 215, super athletic. He tracks everything down in center field. He seems like he has the heart of gold, what he's done so far with kids and signing autographs and being, you know, embracing Oakland. I mean, he's done everything. The only thing is he's not hitting, Jim, the last 20 games, he's hitting .121. So he hasn't been very competitive. But making that case to keep him here, let him grow, as you talk about him evolving as a person, I get that. But when you have a guy struggling like that for 3 weeks and he's really young, what do you think is the key to help get that light bulb to go on?
Well, I think one of the keys is that you want to make sure that he's the kind of player, if it gets so bad, that, because I've always believed this, if he's the real deal, you can at some point send him down if you have to. And if he's the real deal, he will come back, and he will come back strong. I sent down some great players in my career, good players for sure, not all great, but some really good players that everybody said, oh, you're worried about, you know, messing them up mentally by sending them down. I said, listen, I don't believe in that. They got to be tough mentally to play in the big leagues. And if that's going to bother them or ruin their career, then they got a problem. They're never going to make it anyway. So I think, you know, you play them as much as you can. If there comes a juncture where you say, you know what, This kid's just getting beat up so bad, we got to get him away from it, let's send him down to AAA. That's not all so bad. I mean, I know the player doesn't want to hear that, and hopefully that doesn't have to happen. But I don't really know much about the Oakland A's anymore, but I do know this, that I did hear from a lot of good baseball people that they really made a good trade when they traded Olson, and that they really got some talent back. So I assume that's one of the kids that they got back. And, you know, Oakland's got a pretty good track record. You know, not a big payroll over the last, I can't tell you how many years, but I competed against them for a long time. Very respectful of Billy Bean and that organization and what they've done. They've made a lot of good decisions, and they're normally right in the hunt. They're probably not going to be this year, but they're normally right in there going to postseason or close to it.
You know, speaking of a good decision, back in the day, this skinny shortstop, and some people want him as a pitcher, Miguel Cabrera. The story's coming out of Venezuela where go find somebody and he hops a fence at a tryout and the rest is history. And you talk about 3,000 hits, 500 home runs, 600 doubles. You've known him for a long, long time. Watching him grow into the man that he is, watching him where he is here at the end of his career and achieving all these milestones, seeing it through your eyes, what's it been like?
Well, it's been a wonderful experience for me. I experienced a lot of it actually firsthand. I thought the greatest single season I've ever seen since my day. I didn't really remember Yastrzemski's or Frank Robinson's, but the Triple Crown year in 2012 was something I've never seen in my life. And it was one of my greatest experiences and one of my most memorable moments to see what he did that year, because he got no leg hits. You know, I mean, all his hits had to be legitimate. So to see what he's accomplished and continuing to accomplish is amazing. And he's just one of those guys, when you see him, he's different. It sticks out. It sticks out immediately. And you get players like that, you know, from time to time. You know, the Mike Trouts and guys like that, Guerrero Jr., Vlad Jr., and guys like that. They're just different. And it doesn't take anybody a genius to figure that out. They look different. They play different. The ball sounds different. You know, they hit pitches that other guys don't hit. They're just a special group of guys, and to be honest with you, there's really not that many of them.
No, and if you're asked, like, what was it like playing against them? I mean, obviously we did battle against you guys in the postseason, and it was just like every single time he came on deck, it was always like, oh, no, this guy. Because he could leave the yard against you, or he could get a key hit like against Sonny Gray, but he could go left field, he can go right field. How many guys in the history of the game could really beat you foul pole to foul pole and take you deep at the same time that you either coached or coached against?
Well, not very many. Albert Pujols probably, but not very many, to be honest with you. You know, I've said all along, I think Miguel Cabrera had the best opposite field power of any hitter I've ever seen. Now, there's been guys before Miguel that I didn't see, and I'm sure there'll be some guys after that I'm not going to see. But during my time in the big leagues, Miguel had the best opposite field power of anybody I've ever seen. He could also – he was one of the few guys that I've ever seen, and I had two of them, Miguel Cabrera and Magly Ordóñez. They were two of the few guys I've ever seen that could take a hard sinker ball, right-handed hard sinker ball pitcher, and take that ball down at their ankles and shoot a ball in the right field. That's unbelievably hard to do. There's not many guys that could do that. Maglio could do it. Miguel Cabrera could do it. And that kind of stuff separates them.
Well, and then there is the whole part of growing up in the game of baseball, Jim, which is so different from era to era, because these guys come to the big leagues with nothing. And then now you got guys signing hundreds of millions of dollars in guaranteed money in these contracts. So you watch them grow from nothing to what they have into stardom. They have families, they have lives, they have business interests away from the game. Just talk about watching someone like Miguel Cabrera, where he started to where he is now.
Well, it's very interesting, to be honest with you. And I found this out actually throughout my entire career. You know, guys that were making $60,000 and now making $60 million and more, things like that, they were good guys whether they were making $6,000 or $60 million. And there's other guys that if they're not a good guy, they may change. It may, you know, it may change them as a person. But for the most part, I found in my career, the players are great guys. They're young kids. They make a lot of money, but they're good people. And they're really good people. And I found out that I've never really noticed that the money has ever changed any of the good guys. Now, it might buy them a bigger home. It might get them a nicer car. It might do some other things, obviously, for them, which it definitely does. But as far as changing them as a human being, I've never really noticed that very much.
So now with the Tigers, how much do you watch the big club? I know you also watch the minor leagues. How much are you involved, and what exactly is your role with the Tigers these days?
Well, I'm still a special assistant to Al Avila. I watch the Tigers every single game. I don't stick my nose in anything unless I'm asked. I'm actually in Pittsburgh today. I'm going to see a high school player that's going to be involved in a draft, possibly a high pick. So I'm going out to see him tonight. Because he's right in my backyard, basically. But I go to spring training, I watch every game, and I travel with Al to watch every game. And then, you know, I have my opinion if they ask it. But, you know, we got a veteran manager in A.J. Hinch. He knows what's going on. He's got an excellent coaching staff. They don't really need a lot of information or a lot of input. A.J. and I talk from time to time, but I never, you know, butt in or you know, overstep my boundaries. I don't do that. And then, as you said, I'll go to Toledo and Erie, look at our AA and AAA club, and report to Al Avila what I see. And if I think somebody's worthy of bringing up and they're looking for somebody, I'll give them my opinion, and then they can do what they want with it.
Well, I think of your amazing life in baseball, and I know if I was running a ball club and you were part of it, I would want your nose in it a ton. What do you think the best advice? I mean, everybody's got kind of like their go-to. What's that one thing, that advice that you have to help an organization like the Detroit Tigers if somebody like the general manager or the manager come to you?
Well, I'll give you my honest opinion on what I believe. I believe that as an organization that you pay your players well. And when I say, well, I'm talking about fair. I think you treat everybody first class. I think you run a first class organization, the way you travel, the way you run spring training, your facilities. I think you do everything top notch, because then if players complain or a player complains, you got him right in your pocket, because the other players know that that's not true. When one player starts whining about the organization, other players say, hey, wait a minute. Do they pay us fair? Yes. Do they treat us great? Yes. Do we travel first class? Yes. Do we have a great facility? Yes. So this guy's out of line, and that way you can have him right in your pocket. He will get in the line with the rest of the guys. But I think you create that at the top by doing all those things as an organization, and then I think you create an attitude that says, hey, we got nothing to complain about here, fellas. This is as good as it gets. So I think that really helps your organization.
Let's end on this. I know I've never asked you this before, but For you to win a World Series and for you to manage Team USA in the World Baseball Classic, and obviously there's something about when you put USA on your chest and you represent our country. You look back on those two championships, what do you think?
Well, they were two different venues, for sure. In one case, you're with the team from day one of spring training, in a lot of cases from years before, maybe, possibly. And you're with them every day in spring training throughout 162 games, as well as the playoffs. So there's definitely more of a bond there than there is when you just manage a team for 2 or 3 weeks. Although I will say this, the USA team was one of the best jobs and one of the worst jobs I ever had. It was the best job because we got the right guys, everybody that wanted to be there. It was the worst job because you're asking them, you're dealing with somebody else's players, they're not yours, and you're asking them to amp it up a little bit quick early on in spring training when they're probably really not ready to do that. So you're just holding your breath every day that somebody doesn't get hurt. Anybody, I'm talking about anybody. I'm not talking about somebody with a big contract or a little contract. I'm talking about anybody, pitcher, you know, position player. You're holding your breath each and every day. So it's a very strenuous job from that perspective. But we had the right guys. We won it for the first time. It was one of my most enjoyable experiences that I ever had, but it was also one of my toughest.
Well, you're a legend in our game, and it's always an honor to have you on the program. We truly appreciate it. Be well and be safe, and let's talk again soon.
All right. Well, thank you very much for having me.
The great Jim Leland, 3-time manager of the year, won a World Series, manager, and won the World Baseball Classic. I mean, and everybody, I mean, my God, every single time we bring him on, everybody's like, Jim Leland. I mean, he's a big deal. I mean, Jim Leland's one of the great managers of all time. Always like talking to Jim. He is great. Old school. You don't get any more old school than Jim Leland. And then on the set of A's Cast Live on the Field, Sonny Gray stopped by. Good to see Sonny. Well, here on A's Cast Live from the Field, we're going to start with an interview for you of someone who I know a lot of you A's fans, you loved him here as an Oakland A. And one of the things that you think about with my job all these years is getting to see players, whether they stay with us or not, you get to see them mature as professional athletes. You see them grow as people. You see them come out of a college like Vanderbilt, and next you know, show up, you're pitching playoff games, and then obviously it was sad to see you go, but he's now back with us, and we love having Sonny Gray on the program. My friend, it's been a while. How are you?
It has been. I'm good. Like I said, life is good. It feels really good to be back here. I think this is maybe my third time back, but this time it feels good. It always feels good to come back here. The ride into the field, everything. It just feels nice. So, I'm good. I'm doing very well.
Everybody always says it's just comfortable. It feels like home.
Well, you hear it. You go to other teams. So when you're here, you don't know any better. You're just kind of like here, and this is what it is. Especially when you, like for me coming up here, and it was like make your debut as rookie here, doing all the things here in Oakland. It was like, this was it. And then you go other places and they're like, oh, you like Oakland? I was like, I loved it because everyone's like, oh yeah. And I'm like, I don't know, there's just something about that place that's just awesome. So yeah, it does. It's always nice to come back. There's a lot of history. It's a very unique place, and it's got a special part for me.
Yeah, people don't understand because they look at all the issues that we have with the ballpark and everything, but the era that you were here. And when you think of Bob Melvin, you think of all the guys you competed with at such a high level and the playoff games and the packed crowds, there was something special about that era. It's always hard to put your finger on exactly just one thing, but for you guys that were so close, it was a magical time.
Yeah, the walk-off wins. I mean, so many times there were walk-offs hit and walk-off wins happening here. And it was a lot of fun. I came up in that. I think 12 was going to the playoffs, and then I came up and jumped right in the middle of it in 13, and then did it again in 14. And it was kind of like those years, 12, 13, and 14, just kind of being in the middle of it and being here and coming up in that spot was a really fun time here. That's for sure. We had a lot of fun. And like I said, the fans were – it was – there were a lot of packed games. I remember the playoff games, and it's just you look around at this place and look at all the seats, and it was just I was trying to tell some guys over there. I was like, hey, when this place gets going, it's there's not a place like it.
It was like a football game. It was like the NFL and the Raiders during those games. And I remember doing my talk show outside the stadium because we weren't allowed in because ESPN and other people had the right. So even though we're here all year long, we got kicked to the curb outside for the playoffs.
Crazy how that happened.
And everybody was like, well, how do you feel about Sonny Gray starting? And you're like, hey, stuff plays. I don't care how young he is. And you know who we just had on the show was Jim Leland.
Okay.
And talking about Tigers, A's, Verlander, Cabrera, and, of course, just saw Cabrera.
Yeah.
And thinking about you pitching against them brings back all these memories.
Yeah.
And for them, they remember that this was the loudest stadium they'd ever been in.
I believe it. I believe it because I remember what we had game one, two, and then game five here. Yeah, it was – this place gets rolling. It's a special place. And you get all these fans on top of you. It was a – it's a very, very special place, and I'm sure it still has its moments still. But I vividly remember those and things I'll remember forever.
So you know, once you're an A, you're always an A, and we're always gonna root for you no matter where you go. And I think about when you made the comeback and came off the IL. We're rooting for you to pitch well. How you feeling now? Where are you right now?
Yeah, I feel good. As everyone did, I had a little bit of a slower start. The spring was kind of – it was different for a lot of reasons. And, I coming out of spring, I felt okay. And then I went on the IL for a little while. And then I just started, I guess, two starts ago against the A's in Minnesota. And I've made one more start after that, and then I'll throw tomorrow. So the way I see it, it's kind of like my third start of the year. I don't really count the first two, kind of like laboring through some things. So I feel good. I feel good. It's just now I'm just building, trying to build some momentum, create some consistency on the mound, and just kind of continue to get my feet under me and continue to just get into the flow of the season and keep kind of moving forward. So I feel good. I feel good, and I like it in Minnesota. It's a really, really good group of guys. It's been fun getting to know all of these guys that are over there currently. It's a bunch of new faces that came over to the team. So, it's good. I really like the spot that I'm in.
Killer ballpark, good team, good situation, first place.
Mm-hmm.
I love it for you. And I think about, like, with Stephen Vogt I always used to talk about catching you was like, I don't know where it's going. Sometimes I don't think he knows where it's going because it's that – magic that you have, that natural movement, and it can change throughout the game for you, and you can move the ball around. I know we've had many of conversations about that, so I can see a guy like you don't have much of a spring training. I can see where it may take a little bit of time because you got a lot going on when you're out on the mound.
There's a lot of feels that I feel when I'm out there, and a lot of like manipulation and a lot of like getting on the same page with this person, because sometimes I'll just do something different with the ball, and I kind of need you to know that that's about to happen. I got to see Vogt yesterday, which was really cool. I gave him a big hug. He was out there in right field, so that was special. He's one of my all-time favorite human beings of all time, as probably a lot of guys, a lot of people. He's great. But yeah, you're right. I do some different stuff every now and then, and just see what happens.
I think about one of the strengths for this ball club is defense. And for you as a pitcher, what does that mean to you that kind of everywhere you look on the diamond, you got a player out there that can really help you out?
Yeah, that's kind of new for me over the last few years. It is honestly, too, and this can be like cliche, and you can hear people say this, but they put in a lot of time and a lot of effort in defense. Like they're constantly working on it. They're constantly talking about it. It's something that's not just like taken for granted. It's not just like, hey, you just go out here and do this. They take a lot of effort and a lot of thought, and you can tell they care about it. The defensive guys and this team in general, like, really care about it, which is nice. And it's nice as a pitcher to know that, hey, these guys putting the time, putting the effort, it genuinely matters to them. you know, so that makes you feel comfortable and happy, and it makes you want to run and reciprocate and do the same. So it's a nice way to have all aspects and all part of the game kind of flowing together.
I'm not sure where Correa is from a standpoint of Rein Stadium. I know it's either going to be today or tomorrow, whatever it's going to be. But we do know this, having played against him for so long and what he's done in the postseason. He's one of those guys, he's the dude. Like, he's legit. Mm-hmm. Like, and like even through the scandal, after the scandal, he's like, you know, he's the guy that flipped you the bird, said, I'm here to play. I don't care what you guys think. I'm winning games. Just what has he done inside that clubhouse to help change the culture? It's already been a winning culture, but to try and get the Twins over that hump.
Yeah, he's great. He's a special player. Playing against him, you see how talented he is and how special he is, and he's been on a winning team his whole career, pretty much his whole life. So he's a very, very special player on the field, and he's a very, very special person off the field as well. And that's something that I'm getting to see firsthand now, just being around him every day. He brings a lot of special abilities and special talents and good energy to the field every day, and it really is a joy to be around him.
Did it tick you guys off a little bit that everybody just tried to say White Sox are the champs, best team in the American League, gave nobody else in the Central, heck, pretty much didn't give very many people other than maybe like the Astros, Yankees, some team, Blue Jays, a chance in the American League? Did you guys go, whoa, we're still the big boys in this division? Did that tick you off?
Honestly, there's so many new faces on this team. I don't really, like me personally, the way I see it, I didn't know much about the division at all coming into it. So I don't really hear that or listen to that. I don't follow that as far as what other people are saying. It's not something that I do on a day-to-day basis, is listen to what this person says or this person says. So not really. I haven't really heard that. There's a lot of new faces on this team, and there's a lot of guys that come over that have won for a long time and that would say or bring winning attitudes. So I don't hear that. If that makes any
sense.
That's
just us in the media talking about
it. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't mean to say this, but I don't listen
to
y'all.
You can say it.
I don't
know how it rolls here. Yeah, you can be totally honest.
I don't listen to y'all, so I don't listen to the media anymore. I learned my lesson that way, so I just kind of keep that stuff at a distance and control what I can control on a day-to-day basis and with myself and getting my work done. And other than that, I just kind of don't listen to the noise.
Your career now has been pretty interesting with the places you've gone. I mean, obviously, we all know about this place, but then you go to the Yankees, which is a whole different ball mm-hmm. game. Then you go to the Reds, now to the Twins. What's the difference playing on the coast, mm-hmm. playing here, big market, but the A's are different, as we know, going to the Yankees and then playing in the Midwest? What's the difference between the different places?
It's location geographically, I couldn't have done it any crazier. Go as far west as you can go, then go all the way up to the northeast, then go right to the middle, then go all the way to the top. If I knock out a Florida team, then I kind of will be all over the place. I'll be literally all over the map. Every team's unique in their own way. Truly are. I mean, but it's so every team's so different. It's so different in their own way as well. Just like you got to just think of like living your life in a different place. You literally just up and move to a random place, and sometimes not by choice. So you just got to adapt on the fly and kind of make the most out of it as you can. But literally, I mean, a lot of places just couldn't be more different.
Let's end on this. You know, we start seeing you growing a family while you're here. Yeah. How is the family? How is everybody? And what's going on with Sonny Gray off the field?
Yeah, everyone's great. Everyone's really, really good. My wife, Jessica, she's doing awesome. We live in Tennessee still, right south of Nashville. Gunner was born while I was in Oakland in 2015. He's seven now, so he's growing up and he's in first grade and going to school and playing baseball and playing hockey and doing his thing. And now Declan was born in New York. He's three, turns four in September. He's awesome. Gunner and Declan couldn't be the opposite from each other, and they're both so awesome in their own way. Declan is so loving and smiles and just such a good kid. They're growing up. Family's great. Everything's great. I texted Jessica and was talking to her a little bit yesterday just about being back out here, and she said the same thing. She said, yeah, that place does feel like home. She did mention Bo Mill because we were so close with Bo Mill when he was here. She said, if Bo Mill was still there, it would really feel like. And I was like, yeah, I know. But I did talk to him recently, and he said he was doing well. I know he's been out for a little bit of time. He said he was feeling well and feeling really good. So that was good news and good to hear. But everything's good, and everything's good with us. Just really want to, at this point in my career, I've been close at times. I just really want to win a championship, and it's kind of like my main focus is I do want to get back to the postseason and win a championship, and and hopefully it's here in Minnesota.
Yeah, on the Bob Melvin front, doing well. I was texting with him, and he wants to get back.
Yeah.
On like Thursday, and I think the Padres are like, well, let's take a little more time. but he is doing well, and I know about your relationship and how much he loved you. And that's kind of like the one thing that, you know, it's like every single series we always have like a former A, and we love bringing him over here. And I just always want to say thank you because you were always so good to us here with the A's broadcasters and all the different shows that I did. And, of course, we'll always be rooting for you. And good luck the rest of the season. You be well with the family. And hopefully sometime we'll see in the postseason.
That's right. Hopefully this year.
The great Sonny Gray. Thanks so much, Sonny. Right here on A's Cast Live. Great to see Sonny Gray, really a good guy, was always good to us with A's Cast and A's Cast Live, pre and post, you name it, and I know, a fan favorite. We will always root for Sonny Gray. And what an honor it was to have Bernie Williams on the field, on the set of A's Cast Live, truly one of the great players of his generation. Here is the four-time World Series champion. Well, I got to think when Bernie Williams steps on this field, he's got a lot of great memories from all those years playing. And then, of course, what you're going to do tonight with the national anthem, going to be very, very special. This house has been good to you in your career, and now will be good to you as a musician.
Oh, my God. I am so grateful and so fortunate to be here. Be back after all these years. We had so many great things happen to us as a team and to me personally. So, it was a great ride. And now it's just kind of coming full circle for me, baseball and music together.
You know, before we start talking about your baseball career, and even as a musician, you know, we celebrated women yesterday here at the Coliseum who have had breast cancer. My mother passed away of breast cancer not too long ago. And I think about this disease that took your father, that takes a lot of people don't realize how many people die of this, just like breast cancer in this country, and the awareness you're bringing for your father. Before we get into all the other stuff, talk about that, because I know that that's what means so much to you right now.
Yeah, it is a cause that is near and dear to my heart because of my father. I mean, my Bernabe Williams Sr. was the guy that took me in and taught me how to play the game of baseball at a very young age. And he taught me how my first couple of chords on the guitar, where I actually developed this great love for music and sports. It was because of him and, of course, my mom. But in 2001, he passed away from this rare lung disease called idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, which is basically scarring of the lung tissue. And it is progressive, and it's terminal. You know, unfortunately, they haven't found a cure for it. He basically had it, and he didn't know he had it until it was kind of too late. So I think, you know, me sort of raising awareness about it, I think it could help a lot of people deal with this. A lot of the symptoms that are attributed to IPF could be confused with other, illnesses like asthma, COPD, bronchitis. But we are encouraging people to go to the doctor as soon as they started feeling symptoms, which, you know, kind of like normal, kind of like, you know, run-of-the-mill kind of thing. You know, it's like a persistent cough that doesn't end, you know, that's always there. You start feeling fatigue and tired, things that you usually took for granted, like going through a flight of stairs or walking, you know, down the beach or whatever it is. You know, start feeling all these things that are not usual, that are not normal. We're encouraging people to go to the doctor so they can be referred to a lung specialist, and that person will be the one that could make the determination of to whether or not you have IPF, because you definitely don't want that in your life. And you know, you can move on. And if you have it, you know, there's a website called lungsnu.com where you can get information about how to get, you know, options about your treatment. You can be in contact with doctors, caretakers, and even patients that are going through this same process, so you don't feel alone and you don't feel like you're battling this by yourself.
Yeah, when I was reading this today, I'd never heard of it. And then what I'm hearing, it takes the lives of almost as many women as breast cancer, and men can die of breast cancer. And just to know that, you know, what you did in your career with the Yankees is great, and now what you can do from that career to help people and save lives has to be very gratifying, and obviously honoring your father.
Absolutely, no question about that. I think, you know, one of the things that are the perks of, I guess, a profession like I had was you are kind of given a platform to utilize to, you know, to make people aware of things that are close to your heart. If you want to help people, if you want to do whatever you want to do with your platform, it's just a blessing to have the opportunity to speak to people and have the ear of people that will listen to you and what you have to say. So it's a blessing to have it, and I'm utilizing it now to bring this cause into, you know, the people's ears and eyes, so they can be more aware about it.
Obviously, you're a very proud man. Obviously, you had an unbelievable baseball career. But when that was over, and we just talked off the air about playing at Yoshi's, when you finally were recognized as Bernie Williams, the musician, what did that mean to you? Because I know it's always about the World Series and all this kind of stuff, but now you're Bernie Williams, the musician. What was it like when people started recognizing you for your jazz guitar and what you've done in the two albums? What did that mean to you?
Very flattering. I think that, you know, I put a lot of effort into playing guitar and becoming the player that I have become, always keeping in mind that you know, this thing never ends. It's like baseball. You always learn something new every time you play. Guitar is the same thing. Music is the same thing. You have to keep this attitude of always being in a position that you are able to learn something from every experience that you have. When I was playing baseball, to me, the most important thing, I mean, the other things were great. You know, the perks, you know, the traveling, you know, obviously the compensation was, you know, obviously not bad at all. Yeah. But I think, to me, what got me going was to get the respect of my peers, where they could look at you and say, look through the lineup and say, this guy is a player. Okay, we got to be careful with him, you know, because he knows how to play the game. He can hurt us, you know, whatever. Having that kind of level of respect from your peers that are playing, you know, your opposition as well as your players, that was where I got my kicks from. So in music, it's kind of like the same. You want to go into the scene and practice and work so hard that people could see you pass that whole facade of, you know, this former, you know, sports person is going to come in and maybe hack some chords and follow along. You want them to recognize, you know, the work that you have done, which is kind of similar to what they have done in their careers to be to the point that they are. So being part of the group, it has worked. I think you get that respect because you realize that nothing is given to you. You have to earn it and you have to work for it.
And it makes total sense. You don't want to be known as, he's just up there because he was a baseball player. Mm-hmm. And I think as a baseball player, when you took the field in the pinstripes, you're going out there with your teammates. Now you're going up there and you have people behind you, but now you're front and center. It's all you. So all that time, and I have some stats here, 121 games in the postseason. Like, what did your baseball career do for you that now helps you being out front, being the performer, being the musician?
There's so many parallels that I could draw from the sports world into the music. First and foremost, being a team player. You know, you mentioned that you're kind of out there front and center, but the people that are behind you, backing you up, I kind of take the whole music thing as a sort of learning a language and having a conversation with your band members. It's not about me being front and center and they backing me up. It's about me interacting with them and utilizing their talents also to make this collective as good as it can be. So that's one thing. The other thing is performing under pressure. You know, when you're in the batter's box and you have it's you and the pitcher, crowd seeing, umpire there, it's just this great battle that you have psychologically and physically. It puts a lot of pressure on you, but it's all about the preparation that you have put into to get to that moment. So in music, it's the same thing. You know, you go out there on stage, and if you're prepared and you know what you're playing and you have control of your, you know, instrument, You can have more fun interacting with the crowd and with the audience and getting them into the music. If you're not ready, it could be as hard, as challenging, as nervous as being on the plate with having no clue what's going to happen. So, and then, you know, after that, I mean, there's so many more parallels that I could draw that from the world of sports I was able to draw into my preparation as a musician. And they have worked, I mean, so good, so well.
Well, you guys and that core group, I mean, like I said, you played in 121 playoff games. And you think about all the World Series. And I know you guys have gone back to Yankee Stadium. You've been honored, obviously. But have you guys really had a time where you guys can really sit back and go, wow, look at everything we accomplished?
Well, I tell you the truth, man. I still haven't gotten to that point where I can just sit on the couch and just say, you know what? It's been a long journey. It's been quite a ride. That's the same thing that I was doing when I was playing baseball. The moment that I would sit back and start looking at what I did, I would become stagnant and not grow. To me, it was all about the next at-bat. It was all about the next game. It was all about the next season, the next 10 years. You know, where am I going to go? You know, where is this going? It is kind of funny to think about the things that we did and having the opportunity to maybe see some games, you know, in retrospect and see, wow, I looked a lot slimmer back then.
We all did.
I have black hair, you know. It's just like, wow. It's kind of nice to see. Yeah. It's almost like a lifetime ago of experiences. You know, the one thing that I've always trying to stress is just moving into the next thing and what's next, because then life is too short, man, to just kind of rest on your laurels and then try to, you know, think about what you did in the past. As long as I have a breath in my lungs, I'm going to try to keep pushing forward and do things that I've never done before, try new things and learn like it's my first day on the earth.
Well, I know A's fans would want to know. Go back to a couple of those series that were great battles and how loud this place was. Oh, and what was it like to be a Yankee going up against these A's, hard-nosed A's? That was kind of the start of what ended up being a movie, Moneyball and everything. That was leading up to that. What was it like playing against those A's, and what was it like playing in the stadium?
It was awesome. I always liked playing in the stadium. I loved the sort of the openness of it. As a hitter, it was a different story, though, because of the foul territory. It really got me frustrated. I got a pop fly. And, oh, man, the first baseman or the third baseman catching that ball, it was so frustrating. But other than that, being able to play with these fans, which are probably, I would compare them to, you know, the rivalry that we have in Boston with the Red Sox, coming into the West Coast, this was probably the toughest place for me to play. And the fans were, you know, they were like that sort of missing element, you know, that would jump in and really rattle the team, you know, and you cannot do any mistakes out there. There was one time, I think I was facing Mike Oakwitz, who bases loaded, right? I think it was like a night game, and I'm battling with him, you know, ball one, ball two, strikeout, foul, a couple of pitches, count goes to 2-2. He throws me a fork ball in the dirt, right? And I see it, and it's like, okay, ball four. It's ball three, but I think it's ball four. So I start walking down the line, and I look in the dugout. I see everybody just falling off their chairs laughing. Joe Torre is like this. Oh, God, there we go again. And then I look at the batter's box, and the umpire's like, come back here. So I was walking from first base thinking that I had a walk. So this count is 3-2. The fans are really over, really on me, like really riding me hard. Wouldn't you believe that the next pitch, I hit it out of the ballpark. Grand slam. As I'm running the bases, everybody's like, boo. Yeah. The dugout is just laughing, and the umpire is like, oh, you doofus, man. It's such a lost cause. But yeah, that was kind of like, you know, part of the history that I had here in the stadium.
Yeah, I know there's great history and some great battles. And let's end on this. I mean, you're going to go down. I mean, you think about Yankee great center fielders. You know, Joe DiMaggio was from here in Northern California. You think Joe D, you think Mickey Mantle, you think Bernie Williams. I mean, playing center field for the Yankees is kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it's a very coveted position in sports, all sports. That and shortstop, you know, I think Derek sort of made that kind of a famous position as well. But I think, you know, it was a combination of staying balanced and trying to be myself and not really try to put the pressure of emulating all these great players that played before me. And at the same time, pushing myself to be the best that I could be so I can make my mark in the game, whatever that was, you know, at the time. Trying to leave the game with no regrets, you know, put it all out there on the field. And, you know, when it was time to go, I said, you know, I did it, and I did it my way. I had a lot of great memories. I was very fortunate to be a part of teams that went to the World Series. There's people that play this game for years and years and years and never really had an opportunity even to go to the playoffs. So we went to the World Series 6 times, and we came victorious 4 of them. So it is something that you have to feel so much gratitude for, you know, the time, you know, the place, the people, and all the experiences, you know, that I went through that are still, you know, so vivid to this point, you know. And I'm so happy and so blessed to have the opportunity to do that.
I love you got the guitar on your back. You're ready to rock. Let's get this thing going.
Ready to go.
Hey, thank you so much for stopping
Absolutely,
by. We
man.
Truly
thank
appreciate
you.
It. And good luck with this second career. Your music's fabulous. I know everybody can follow you online and kill it tonight.
Oh, man. If I can handle facing Berrizzito out there, this is going to be hopefully a lot easier.
He's one of the greats of his time. Bernie Williams right here on A's Cast Live.
We'd like to thank Robbie Grossman, Jim Leland, Sonny Gray, and Bernie Williams for all being on A's Cast Live. Now back to A's Cast, powered by iHeartRadio.
This has been a presentation of the Oakland Athletics.